Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, getting it right. With climate change and the global economic crisis, more and more people will be leaving home to look for a better future in foreign lands. We look at the challenges that lie ahead. And how an idea of two British grandmothers has blossomed into a worldwide prayer movement for peace, the family, and the future of the world's children. We're living in times of a big economic downturn. Many people in industrialized nations are losing their jobs, while poor countries are getting poorer. Violence, theft, and even suicide seem on the increase. Often, immigrants take much of the blame. Here in Italy, people from Eastern Europe and the Maghreb are often blamed for much of the growing violence, while the foreigner in general is increasingly frowned upon because of the perception that he has taken away Italian jobs. I asked the head of policy at the Geneva-based International Catholic Migration Commission, John Bingham, to tell us how he sees the current crisis and where it's likely to go.
That's going to be the question of these next few years for sure, one of the hardest questions for our societies, whether the societies receiving migrants or societies from which migrants come. The global crisis is hitting the whole planet. It's hitting north and south and east and west in dramatically similar ways. It's hitting the economies. It's hitting jobs directly. It's hitting livelihoods at all levels. It's hitting people of positions in business. It's hitting people at farms. It's a challenge for everyone. For migrants, in particular, for migrants who have moved in order to find jobs, there's a double hit directly on their ability to work in countries where there have been jobs, and a hit on their families at home, most of whom rely very directly on the earnings that the husband or the wife or the mother or the father or someone in the family has only been able to make in the country to which they've migrated. So it's an issue from every direction, and it is an issue that unfortunately raises in these very rough times a greater degree of anxiety on the part of countries receiving migrants towards those who come. And that's to say that even in good times, we've seen much too much in any number of countries of a reaction against the stranger in the land or the foreigner who's come for work. So much the worse and so much more troubling in times of global crisis.
You are very close to the migrant issue, but what do you say to, for example, the Italian factory worker or the French builder who blames foreigners for taking his job away and putting him on the street in his own country?
Yeah. Well, what we say is to be always careful with discrimination of any kind. Someone who has come from another country may well be a resident of a country, may well be a worker in any kind of job for many years and contributing to the society in which they live and work in every way comparable to a citizen who's been born there. That contribution goes to not only the performing of services and other labor, it goes to paying taxes. And in the combination of performing services and labor and paying taxes, they actually go towards strengthening the economy. They go towards supporting jobs for broader numbers of people, broader numbers of native-born workers, as well as perhaps people from other countries. So the migrant laborer, as much as they can be seen as taking jobs, actually support jobs and create jobs. Research in any number of European countries have gone to demonstrate that exactly that phenomenon, the actual job creating value of migrant workers and migrant entrepreneurs in countries that receive migrants, a role of actually saving cities throughout Europe and other countries that had been on the decline for demographic reasons, for industrial and economic reasons, saved by an influx of a number of migrants or migrant communities. So migrants are actually part of the solution, not part of the problem. It's a difficult dynamic because it begins with the very hard reality and the suffering that the people have who lose jobs, whether they're citizens or migrants. So it's a hard dynamic to work with, and it has to be done carefully.
Now, you work, John, with refugees and migrants in more than 30 countries around the world. What are some of their stories, and how is this economic crisis affecting them?
Yeah, the effect of the crisis is very, very individual and personal in the lives of the people with whom we work. At the broadest level, the hardest effect of this crisis is on the ability of people to work for a fair earning and feed their families. That's what the bulk of the world's 200 million migrants move across borders, leave their homes for, sometimes leave their families, their children for. And that's to find work that's not available at home, to work hard at that job, or in many cases, two jobs, and in large numbers, send some of the paycheck, some of the earnings home to feed the family, to take care of the kids, to send them to school, hopefully to give them an opportunity to not migrate someday, to be able to earn a living in the country at home. And the migrant dream that we encounter most often, the migrant worker's dream, is to be able to return home and to be at home and to, if necessary, work at home, but to be with family in the country in which they were born.
Well, you're right, John. We've talked about wars and economic factors contributing to so many people leaving their homes to look for a better life elsewhere. But, you know, one thing we haven't considered is that with global warming, with the shortages, increasing shortages of water, what is believed to happen sooner or later, the increasing size of the oceans, with little islands disappearing, we're going to see more and more immigration. So if we don't get it right now, what are we going to do later?
Yeah, well, we have to get it right, you know, every day and month and not just all at once. It's migration is, you know, and human mobility has been with us since the beginning of time. It's one of the great builders of human civilization, of the very societies now that sometimes struggle with newcomers are fundamentally migrant built. So we have to get it right. Every step of the way, we have to adjust to realities. Climate change is certainly a set of worries. Only one of which is the question of migrants that are losing their places of birth and losing their countries with no option but to migrate. That's a phenomenon that has to be addressed. Yes, and the world has come together and is coming together to try and consider the migration aspects of climate change along with the myriad of other concerns there. The idea of responding to migration, or the need to respond to migration, is not just one to imagine we can close doors and it'll be over. That would hurt the countries that need migrants as much as it would hurt the individual migrants and their families themselves. The challenge of the day, and the challenge each day and moment in this, whether it's reacting to climate change possibilities or wars or conflicts or natural problem of famine or other, is to manage the migration. And that calls for bringing together all of the actors, the political actors at national and regional levels, the international institutions of the United Nations, among others, civil society organizations, with the church always active on these issues, and other organizations, with the media, the role of the media increasingly important as a major actor and driver of action and reaction on these matters.
we haven't mentioned Pope Benedict and the Church's calls for integrating migrant communities into our societies.
Yes.
Is enough emphasis being placed on integrating migrants today?
Yeah, integration is one of the most important challenges facing societies and migrants alike. Migrants move to a country to either live there for a long period of time or sometimes just to work with shorter projects in mind. But the question of integration is itself, it's a challenge day to day. It's how a migrant lives in a society and is perceived in a society. It's how a society welcomes or not that migrant, and how together they hold together with some kind of social cohesion. The Church, always talks of common good. So as much as some think that the Church is only on the side of migrants or blindly on the side of migrants and foreigners, that's not where the Church stands. That's not where the Church hopes the situation will move, and that's not where we pray. Where we stand and hope and pray is for a sense of common good in neighborhoods, in cities, and in countries, and then a universal common good among nations and across the globe, where we can look at the needs of a society that's receiving migrants and the needs of migrants, all as human reflections of God, and say, how do we make this thing work? Integration is a key, is a key to a sense of belonging, a sense of solidarity, and the achievement of a common good.
And a warm thanks there to John Bingham, who is head of policy at the Geneva-based International Catholic Migration Commission. For those of us who are mothers, how many times have we despaired of the behavior of our children? Those on drugs, those who talk back and rebel against us, those who get constantly into trouble, those who turn their back on God. How many of us have borne the unbearable fears and the excruciating wounds that only a mother can feel for a sick child? It seems sometimes that mothers, like Our Lady, were born not just to love and to protect, but often to grieve over the welfare of their children and family. Often, mothers can feel alone, faced with the immense responsibility of forming the future generations of loving and giving young people in a world fraught with pitfalls and conflict.
Stop your crying and wipe away your tears. All that you have done for your children will not go unrewarded. They will return from the enemy's land. There is hope for your future. Your children will come back home. I, the Lord, have spoken.
Those words from Jeremiah serve to give mothers strength. They've been adopted as a motto by thousands of mothers the world over in a growing interdenominational movement called Mother's Prayers. The movement began in 1995 in Veronica Williams' living room in Kent in southeast England, when she and another Catholic grandmother decided to meet weekly to pray for their children and their children's children. Soon, dozens of other mothers were knocking on Veronica's door, asking to join them too. The movement now covers the globe, with prayer groups in more than 90 countries. They're not just for Catholics. Anglicans, Orthodox, and Protestant mothers form part of the groups too, all united in their prayers for the welfare of their children and world peace. I sat down with Veronica when she recently came to Rome to introduce Mother's Prayers to Italian moms. I asked her how the movement came about.
I was involved with some Christians that produced a booklet called What on Earth Are We Doing to Our Children? That listed all the things that were happening in our society that affect our children. and this was produced to take to the House of Lords. I have 9 grandchildren, and when I read this booklet, I knew I had to do something because it was a shocking report.
You are Catholic, right?
I am.
But this has become a, you know, an interdenominational phenomena because you're present in more than 90 countries by now. What do you attribute all this success to?
I believe that this Mother's Prayers is a special grace that the Lord has given us because there are a lot of pain in mothers' hearts today, not just Catholics, but everyone. And when people hear of something that is being blessed and miracles are happening, they are all quite happy to unite on the things that we all believe in. And the things that maybe are still a bit difficult, we leave those aside for the Holy Spirit to change.
How have you seen it touch your own family?
Well, I know that, first of all, it touches the mother. It keeps the mother more peaceful because the spirituality is that we come to understand that Jesus is calling us to trust him with our children. And therefore, I think the mothers first of all change, and then we see wonderful answers to prayers. In my own case, I see a dramatic conversion of my son-in-law, which was nothing short of a miracle.
In what way?
Well, he was an atheist. He found anyone Christian were people that were a bit lacking and they needed something. I think he thought I had nothing better to do. And so he was rather anxious that my daughter didn't become like me. But through prayer, he had a conversion experience. And he now is a Catholic.
How did you grow from 2 people to more than 2 people?
Well, right from the beginning, when we felt the Lord had put this on our hearts through this document, we said, Lord, you be in charge, you be the boss, we be your secretaries. And so what we do is we totally rely on the Lord for these things to happen. So we haven't advertised anything ourselves, but the Lord has done it for us and he's done a wonderful job. Because as you say, it's now in over 90 countries with hundreds and thousands of groups.
You've told me that it's through meeting people, just word of mouth. People have just shown up on your doorstep asking to be part of the group or for more information.
Yeah.
What are some of the stories of these people that you've met that have marked your life?
Well, I just met one woman on a train once. I had been sightseeing in London, and this woman wanted to know if it was the right carriage. And when I said yes, I noticed she had an accent. So I said, oh, were you sightseeing? And she said, no, I'm moving to your area. And she asked us, were we sightseeing? And we said, yes, but we'd been to London before when we took this booklet to the House of Lords. And so we started talking about problems with children. And she said, I don't really know what the answer is. So I felt the Lord saying, ask her if she's a Christian. And when I asked her if she was a Christian, she said yes. And we told her about Mother's Prayers. And she said, now I know why I missed the last train and why I'm sitting in this carriage. The Lord has been speaking to me. I haven't been listening. And I'm going to take Mother's Prayers to Mexico and to Kuwait. So this is so wonderful. There's no way I could have arranged to go to Mexico and to Kuwait, but the Lord can.
Tell me about how these prayer sessions are actually formulated.
Well, a group can be just 2 women, and they don't have to be physical mothers. It's for spiritual mothers too. And we meet together once a week. And we have a little booklet that has very informal prayers. I call them chatty prayers. It's just a mother's heart speaking to Jesus. And they're prayers that prepare our hearts for a moment when the mother will kneel before the cross of Jesus, understanding that he loves her children more than she could possibly love them. And that her children really belong to him and that he can change things that she can't. And so after we've said these little prayers, we write the names of our children, and one by one we go to the cross and we say, Lord, over to you. These problems are too big for me, but you can change these things. And we place the name of our children at the foot of the cross. It has to be a total surrender, we call it, where we totally trust him. We're not praying as perhaps we did in the past, where we said, Lord, help, you know, when there's a problem. And then when we finished our prayer, start to worry again. I feel the Lord is saying, come to me, all you who labour and are burdened, I will give you rest. And so we go to him with our problems and we leave them there. We don't take them back again.
Another part of these group sessions that you have, you said they're limited to 8 women. Is that right?
Yes, we usually say between 2 and 8 because we realise mothers' prayers is as much for the mothers as it is to children, because mothers have great pains in their heart often that perhaps they can't share. And so at our meetings, because there's a rule of confidentiality, for the first time she might be able to say, no, I'm not all right. I'm really worried about my children. And she can share at a deep level, knowing it will stay within the group. And that group will not give her advice. They will just offer everything to Jesus in total trust in his promises. Ask and you will receive.
What about the fathers? I noticed, I looked up your website since I talked to you last, and I noticed that there is a father's prayer.
There is, you see. When we started to give talks, and often there were men there, I think they got a bit jealous and they think, all these women are being so blessed and the children are being blessed because there are miracles happening, like children coming off drugs, children that have been missing from home, coming home, all kinds, children coming back to faith. And the men said, what about us? So we prayed for it as a group, as a community, and we felt just as Joseph was so important to the Holy Family, he was the protector, he was the guide, that the men would be that for mothers' prayers. And so a special prayer was written that each day the men said to ask the Lord to guide and protect mothers' prayers and their families. But then quite spontaneously, the fathers started to meet together and they have found it a blessing where they don't have to be all strong and macho and saying, oh, nothing's a problem. They can say, I'm really worried about this or I'm really worried about that. And then they're supported by their fellow men and they pray together and they offer everything to the Lord.
Are your prayers exclusively for your own family or for also other people? Can you, quote-unquote, adopt someone?
Yes. Well, we felt the Lord calling us through our children, naturally. The Lord knows that a mother would do anything for her children. So when this was put on our hearts to pray for our children, the women are just responding so well. And so we do pray for our own children. That's how we were called. But then when people know that we're praying, they say, will you pray for mine, children? Will you pray for this? A friend of mine has got problems. So we write these names down. Then after we've given the Lord, presented the Lord our children, we then ask him to bless all the people that have asked us to pray.
You spoke earlier of miracles. I know you told me that your son-in-law is one of these miracles because from atheist he became a Catholic even. And he's actually helping you now with your community in Kent in the UK. Have you seen other conversions like this?
We hear of them quite frequently. In fact, one of the big answers to prayers is children coming back to faith. And there doesn't seem to be any other explanation other than the prayer and the Lord touching their hearts or perhaps removing from them the things that are holding them back. We know of atheists that have become Christians. We've heard of people that have been lukewarm in their faith and gone away. And through mothers' prayers, through their concern for their children, they've come again into a relationship with Jesus and have returned to their faith.
What sort of reception or relationship have you had with church officials, with priests and sisters?
Well, I want to say that I'm sure it's because all this, I believe, belongs to the Lord. He seems to go ahead of us and prepare hearts, because wherever we go in the world, in New Zealand, in Australia, Russia, the priests welcome us with open arms, the bishops, archbishops and cardinals. And while I've been here in Rome, we've made the first steps of having it, our organisation officially recognised by the church.
You mentioned also your visits to Russia.
Yes.
What sort of relationship have you established with the Orthodox Church?
Oh, this is wonderful, because Orthodox women, they're mothers too. We've got many groups in the Orthodox Church, and we also have Orthodox and Catholics praying together. It is like a miracle, because that's quite unusual in Russia. But I've also had interviews with archbishops in the Orthodox Church who have given us their blessing.
Hmm. Where would you like to see this go, Veronica?
To be honest, I really take on my role as a secretary. I say the Lord is the boss, I'm his secretary, so I don't have any plans or visions. I just go where he asks me to go. And to be honest, I'm more amazed, I think, than other people at how the Lord is spreading mothers' prayers, because it's his work, not mine.
In your community centre there in Kent, how many people are part of your community, and how are you expanding in that area?
Well, we have 6 people that actually live in the community, but they live part-time. They're all older people. They have their own families. So they spend half the week in community, half the week in their own home. But we also have just people that visit the community that come and help us with things like finance and cooking and all kinds of things as support, as well as attending the prayer meetings, because it's mainly a place of prayer.
Mm-hmm. Would you say your biggest community would be in the UK, or are you also you mentioned also the Slovakia and Ukraine?
It's difficult to know, because often people start groups and they don't tell us. So if anyone's listening to this and they start a prayer group, do please tell us, because we send out newsletters to keep you informed. So I think perhaps for every group there could be 10 or more that aren't registered. But I know, I've been told in France there's 1,250 groups, in Slovakia 1,500 groups. To be honest, I don't know how many in England, but I know there are many, many, and expanding all the time. I would just like to say, you know, I mentioned that it was only necessary to have 2 people to start a group. But what is such a blessing is that during our prayer time, we unite our prayers with the hundreds and thousands of women around the world. And therefore, it's not just 2 people praying for their children. They're supported in prayer by hundreds and thousands of women. And I like to think, when I'm in bed, women in Australia are praying for my children and my grandchildren. So through all the different time zones, these wonderful prayers are being offered, and we are united with a common thought: Lord, change this world for our children. We trust you.
And a very warm thanks there to Veronica Williams, and the best of luck to her for her growing project. The Mother's Prayers website offers more information about the movement in several languages, including Ukrainian, Russian, Dutch, and Indonesian, besides English, of course. You'll find them at www.mothersprayers.org. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.